Good to see you all again. Man, you are gluttons for punishment. Wow. I'll tell you this, you guys, when I come down here, I don't have to worry about having a full day. Man. Really? All right. Didn't know I was going to go to a medieval Jack and Jill wedding shower. That's new for me. I had a good day. Good day. Let me give you a few prompts. I'm going to show a movie. Movie night at church. How many times does that happen, right? Yay. Popcorn? Hot dogs in the back. I use this movie quite a bit in classes that I teach, and particularly when I work with churches. Some of you have seen it. It's a short film. It's 20 minutes. But I want to give you some cues, because when the film's over, I know you're going to love this part. You got to find a group of three or four people around you and talk about it together before we talk about it as a group, okay? So if you're one of those people who, like me, hate small groups, get over it. We're going to use them tonight. Because here's what I want us to look for. I am sometimes referred to at Lipscomb as Dr. Metaphor, because I like metaphors, or I like stories, because they help me think in ways that I haven't previously thought. And we talked this morning about how important it is for us to rethink church culture in terms of how we see ourselves in it and what it is that church offers the world, which is an opportunity to be who God has created us to be. Now, here I want you to pay attention to the setting, and some of you may or may not know the story of Nick Vujovic, who's an incredible individual. I once had a student watch this film and say, how did they find an actor to take on that part? Well, okay, he's known as the limbless man. He's one of the most sought-after motivational speakers in the world. He's Australian. He's a strong advocate for pro-life because his mom was encouraged to abort him. They knew early that he had all kinds of developmental issues with his physical body. His most recent book, I love all of his books, they're really well written, but he has no arms and legs, and his most recent book is Being the Arms and Legs of Jesus. His sense of humor, too, in terms of how he speaks is just really powerful. But they made this little short film around him. What I really find interesting about the short film is it won all kinds of awards at film festivals, which, if you know anything about the film industry, these are very liberal groups. And they figured out that it was actually a metaphor for the church, and all of a sudden it wasn't near as popular as it once was. But it's a very redemptive story. Here's what I want you to look for. Okay, I asked them to use the version that actually has the subtitles. I know that you can hear, but sometimes in the film, the noise in the background of the film, or maybe the articulation of the actor or actress in the film, is not as clear as I would like for it to be. And I'm telling you, the script in this film is really well written. So pay attention to the words. There's going to be a Christ figure. See if you can figure out who that is. Notice the historical context. You'll have no trouble figuring out when this was made. And since this church, it seems to be the theme this week is circus, this is about a circus. But what I want you to see is the narrative and the counter-narrative. And what I mean by this is the narrative of the world versus the narrative, the counter-narrative. Now, not all of this will be comfortable. Some of this will challenge your thinking a little bit. That's okay. But I'm basing this on the presupposition. That is, that I'm convinced this is true from my experience of working with people literally all over the world, that everyone needs to be a contributor to something of worth, that everybody is seeking validation in some way, shape, or form. If this is true, then it has all kinds of implications on our ability to reach out with the gospel. And what it says about what we can do in sharing the true message of life, I think is very interesting. So look for the Christ figure. Look for the story behind the story. There's sort of a story that carries you through the entire story that you may or may not catch on to right away. And I'll just sort of hint at this. Pay attention to the little boy that you'll meet in the first scene of the movie. because there's something very redemptive there. But look for the redemptive themes. See if you can figure out who the Christ figure is, how he responds to the world, and how he has a little bit, well, a significantly different story. And if you can understand the placement of what this could be in terms of the church at Central, I want to have a robust, I have students who call me Dr. Robust because that's one of my favorite words, robust. I want to have a robust discussion about what the church could be, okay? Okay, I don't know what you want to do with the lights. If you want to, if you can, dim them if you need to. If not, let's watch and I'll be back with you in about 20 minutes.
Breaking my heart. We're all the circus you need, kid.
But they arrived. Can we, Mr. Mendez?
Why not? Let's go.
Okay, boys, time to get me a date with the bearded lady. Who's with me?
Great riches, come, sit down. I tell you all about your fate. Great riches, come.
They're gonna come get you now. You are my little boy. I'm gonna get you if I can.
Come on in, ladies and gentlemen. We have the best freak show in town. Mr. Pete Robinson. You got the limitless band. Step right on in. Come on in, ladies and gentlemen. We got Baby Lulu. Mr. Pete Robinson. The limitless band. Come on in, ladies and gentlemen. Come on in. We have the best show in town.
Like a large heifer. She's a woman of extraordinary weight, has a peculiar appetite for whole chickens. Now, down this way. Paint it, man. His world travels can be seen on every inch of his body, from head to toe. And now, ladies and gentlemen, gather in. A perversion of nature. A man, if you could even call him that, whom God himself has turned his back upon. I give you the limbless man.
Will you look at that?
Look at him.
Move along, kids.
You are magnificent.
Hey,
get away from him!
What's the matter with you?
It's all right. No harm in it. My fault. Maybe I got a little too close. Hey, friend? You have a good evening now.
You better get a hold of yourself before the next show, Gimp.
Real nice, Will. Seems to change your mind about joining one of them fancy shows.
Mm-hmm. What are you saying?
Don't you know nothing? That was Mendes. You just spit on the showman from the Butterfly Circus. Butterfly, butterfly. You kill me, Will. I'm hungry. I'm gonna get me some cotton candy.
A man, if you can call him that, whom God himself has turned his back upon. The Limbless Man!
Muy bien.
Boss. Good morning.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias indeed.
Delicious. It's going to be delicious.
Yes. May I have this dance? Thank you so much. Poppy.
Would you get my trunk? It's so heavy.
But it's easier for you because you're so strong.
There's a dead man in the truck!
What?
Well, now, look at this. This is wonderful. Come on over by the fire, warm up a bit, little man.
Circus now?
Maybe I will.
Hold on a minute. We don't have a sideshow here.
What do you mean? Every circus has one. People come from all over the place to see us.
And why do they come, Will?
But yours could be different.
No. There is nothing inspiring about immense imperfections on display.
See, Will, we're happier here. And you can stay as long as you like.
But I do run a different show.
And now, one of the greatest displays of human contortion ever seen. It is my pleasure to introduce Anna, Queen of the Air. And the strongest man you'll ever see. Of the flying trapeze and the oldest performer in the air, Papi!
See you at the fairgrounds. 2 days only. Come on by. Butterfly Circus. 2 days only.
How do? My boy here would sure like to say hello to the strongest man in town.
Well, I'm sugar daddy stronger, but I'd make a close second.
Wow. Are you in the show too, mister?
No, not exactly.
We best be going now. Thank you kindly.
You bet.
Wow, did you see that, Dad? I'm gonna be the strongest man in the world someday. I'm just like that man. I'll lift anything I want to.
Yeah, boy, you can do whatever you want.
Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, what this world needs is a little wonder. Isn't it? The way they move, full of strength, color and grace.
They're astounding. But you?
Cursed from birth. A man, if you can call him that, who God himself turned his back upon.
Stop it! Why would you say that?
Because you believe it. But if you could only see the beauty that can come from ashes.
Problem now. You're no good to me, so get out.
You're good enough for me, Dollface. Here you go.
But they're different from me. Yes, you do have an advantage. The greater the struggle, the more glorious the triumph.
I can't find my caterpillar. Where is he?
He's right there, in the cocoon, see? He'll be fine. You won't even recognize him when he comes out.
Oh, wow.
Hey! Hey, George! Poppy! I need help to cross! Can anyone help me?
Judge! Can you help me?
Hey, where are you going? What's the matter with you?
Just gonna leave me here?
I think you'll manage.
What? I guess I'll just magically get up, huh?
Hey, you're stopping. How's the water? Time for a swim.
Hey, Will, you coming in?
Yep. Hey, Nick, I'm coming!
Hey!
Will!
Your eyes will witness this fine evening. Our bravest soul, as he cheats death by ascending 50 feet into the air and leaping into this pool of water.
Wow, how did you do that, mister? Were you scared? It was so high.
Johnny, I can do it.
Sweetie, you can do anything.
Did it hurt when you hit the water?
Thank you.
go, Sam.
Okay, fine friend. Talk about what you saw. What were the most important lines? What was the overall message? Let's take a few minutes and then I'll facilitate the discussion. I know it's not easy to group up in an auditorium like this, but I'm sure you can. I'm watching. I wish I had the power of the great. I can't make you do anything, but find someone. Tell me what. Talk to one another about what you saw, what you thought was unusual, redemptive themes, and then we'll talk about it as a group. And someone might want to turn up the lights again. No. Second. The second hour I will. Okay. Not me. I bet you do. 2-minute warning. Let's reassemble. Ed's been nice enough to volunteer to be the running mic for me. So since we're streaming this, people need to hear your voice. So if you'll raise your hand, we'll wait just a minute. And then I'll just throw a couple of questions at you, general questions that you can answer as a group. So what's the setting? Okay, the Great Depression, right? What does this have to do with the church? Family, circus, okay. So we have a setting in a culture that's really struggling, all right? I told you this morning I'm encouraged by the fact that in some ways our culture is fragmenting like never before. Not that I want that to happen, but I see it as a redemptive opportunity. Because my favorite line, which changes every time I watch it, do you remember when they're going through the little shack settlement? Do you remember what Mendez, who, you know, clearly he's the Christ figure, right? Do you remember what he said as they're going through that settlement? What? Yeah, what this world needs is a little wonder, hope, wonder, right? Yes. So when I was negotiating with Richard on today's activities, he wanted me, as it came coming out of the leadership group, he wanted me to talk tonight about, well, what would the church look like if they were an Ephesians 4 church? And I've got a lot of different movie clips that I use in my classes, partly because my students tend to stay awake when I show movies, but partly because sometimes metaphors can really give us new ways of thinking. And some of you have seen Butterfly Circus before, but I use this a lot when I'm working with churches in different places in the world to give them an understanding of what they could be. In terms of this world needs a little wonder. So what are the two narratives? Will, in the when you first encounter Nick, who in the movie is called Will, Nick Voivod, right? Okay, so what's the first narrative that he's in? Anyone? Freak show, all right? Freak show. He was a sideshow, right? Now, I've watched this so often that I noticed things that you might not have caught if you've seen it for the first time. But the contortionist is Mendez's right-hand man, right? Did you notice his reaction to Mendez going into the sideshow? Did anyone notice that? What would you interpret that as? That's exactly. Here he goes again, right? Here he goes again. He's going back. He's a rescuer. And you saw how, you know, the idea of is that the world stands back and looks at your particularities, and you become a freak that everyone just sort of laughs at and giggles at, right? So what struck you with Mendez's encounter first with Will? Here we go. Hang on.
He said, you want to be in the sideshow, and we don't have one.
Oh, well, before that, though, when he first goes in the sideshow. Ed? Okay.
Sorry.
You are magnificent, right? So how do you think Will heard that? Well, I mean, you saw his response. Why would he spit in his face? Anyone? What do you think? Back here. Run, Ed, run!
Oh, man.
Oh, that's another movie. Run, Forrest, run. No, I said.
He spit at him because he couldn't hit him, so he could only do the one thing he knew, and that was spit on him. He didn't believe it. So.
Okay, there, right?
He didn't believe it, so he spit
so
at him.
So what did he think Mendez was saying? Being sarcastic. Yeah, which I hear, understand is one of the great qualities of this church. No? Okay, sit. I asked some people today, why did you choose Central as your church? And some of them said, it's a great place for sarcasm or something. Okay, for some of you, that sarcasm is the gap. You didn't get what I just said. All right. So, no, I think that, of course, you know Mendez is looking at his magnificence. He sees him as magnificent. But Will has no criteria by which to understand that, right? Okay, so now, let's move forward. The dead man in the truck, right? So Will shows up in the butterfly circus, and... Hold up.
He was billed as the man who God had forsaken.
Yes, yeah, that God himself has just totally... Yeah, so... He's not only the freak show, he's the center of the freak show, and it's God's fault, right? And that he's worthless. He's absolutely worthless. So then when they get in this encounter you were talking about, they're sitting around, you know, eating breakfast, they're getting ready to set up the tent for the circus. They have this really interesting discussion where what does Will think he's going to do now with this new traveling troupe? Same thing, right? He's a sideshow. That's who he is. This is his identity. He believes it. And he just wants to be with this big-time circus. So the butterfly circus is well-known. And so Mendez makes a really interesting statement with which you might not agree. What did he say? Yeah. Why? You remember his phrase? Different kind of circus. We're happier here. But there's nothing wonderful about putting man's imperfections on display. Okay, now don't misunderstand that, because he's not saying that Will didn't have challenges. He says that's just not what we focus on. That what we focus on here is the value. So as you see the story progressing and you go through and you see these people that are performing and you recognize they're really artistic, then you have sort of the center scene of the movie, which we've already talked about, where they're performing in the little, what did you, anything that you caught in the, when they were out in the little shanty town? Anyone? I heard some.
One of the things that Mendez said to Will while he and Will were watching the performance perform, he said of the people, he said that they are full of strength, color, and grace. He said that of his performers.
Right. And then what did we find out about those performers?
They all came from different stations in life, and they had potential that they developed later.
Okay, so but in the story of the world, what'd you have? You had a brawler, you had an old washed up man, and a prostitute. Okay, what's interesting to me is this: these seem to be sort of characteristic of the people that Jesus hung around. The world's throwaway people.
So I have a little question.
I didn't count, but were there 12 of the performers? I hope there were.
Well, if there weren't, there should have been.
I agree.
So that might have been too overt, but I mean, I was telling some of you that this won several primary awards for short films until someone wrote an article that pointed out that the whole film was sort of a redemptive story. In fact, what was the story behind the story? What's the first character you meet?
The prostitute's son.
The prostitute's son, right? That's where Sammy came in the story. And what did he have in his hand? Caterpillar, right? And so what does the caterpillar do? Transforms. So Butterfly Circus, right? The idea is it had to die in order to develop wings. It had to die to the old story to become the new story. So the whole idea of the Butterfly Circus is this is where you come to find your wings. You're not going to be judged by your limitations. In fact, we're going to take your broken stories and make them, what were the words you used? The grace. You wrote them down. Strength and color and grace, okay? So from brokenness and irredeemability, they became grace and strength and color and beauty, okay? This is the transformative power of the story that we've been talking about all year. And what I like to do with my students when I show them this film is I say, okay, I don't know who you're going to identify with in this film. You may identify with Will. And you've believed stories. You know, and I've told you about interviews that I've had with students in my office who will tell back to me the stories that they've heard about themselves. They identify themselves by the false stories they've been told. By the way, parents, be very careful about your favorite stories concerning your children, because they sometimes mark our children in ways we do not realize. And when families get together, they tell stories. And if those constant stories are stories that you see as being really cute and funny, but it's belittling the child, it's not helpful to their understanding of themselves. We believe the stories that we hear about ourselves. And this is where the redemptive narrative becomes such a powerful, transformative thing. So the line of the movie is what then? Right after this, what does he say to Will that just seems to be so mean? Sideshow guy, right? He said, look at all this grace and glory, and then Will goes, so what's that have to do with me, right? And that's when Mendez turns, and it just seems so mean. He repeats back the sideshow orator's description. Here's a man who God himself, right? And Will's response, this time he's not spitting anymore, but he sort of spits out, why would you say that? And the answer was, because you believe it. And there may be some of you in the room tonight that believe the false story of the world. You've identified yourself according to the world's standards instead of, I would love for you to see the eyes of Jesus when he looks at you. Because I think he'd get down and look at you in the eyes, just like Mendez looked in Will's eyes, and say, you are magnificent. And you may not believe it, but I do. And so the power of how this narrative differs, instead of a sideshow, it may take a while to find your place, right? You remember what Mendez told Will? You can stay here as long as you like. By the way, there's also a little sweet sub-story going on. What is Sammy's responsibility with Will? Sammy's not a performer. What's he do? Okay, he feeds popcorn to Will, right? They all have a place. And so Will is just looking at the wonder and enjoying the performers, and then he comes to understand that those are all redeemed stories. And by the way, pay attention to Poppy. All right, so what was Poppy before Mendez found him? He's just sitting there playing the accordion, which I understand is potentially a metaphor for hell. I don't know. If you play accordion and you were just offended, I didn't really mean to. Well, maybe I did. So anyway. Now, look, I grew up playing the tuba, so what do I have to say? Boom, bum, bum, boom, bum, right? That's what angers me. So what's wrong? What's wrong with that? Why couldn't he just be an accordion player? That was way under his performance possibilities, right? So did you notice that when Mendez throws the advertisement down, what it said? Poppy, the greatest performer in the air, already printed. He knew Poppy's potential. I think one of the greatest resources in our churches that are left unused are our retired people. It's one of the reasons why I hate missing Sunday morning at my home church at home in Nashville, because I teach a class that I've taught for 20 years, which the median age used to be 80. I was the youth group. It's about 100 people strong. We used to be called the early birds because we'd meet at 7 o'clock in the morning. Now we've gone back to the conventional hour because people wanted to participate in it that didn't want to get up at 7. And what we did about 6 months ago is we invited in the college kids. So it's the only class I know of. So now our median age is like 50, and we think we're young, but it's not that. We just brought in the college group who sits in. And the reason I did that is because these people have years and years of experience in the kingdom that's never tapped. Drives me nuts. You have all these people who have had significant contributions in culture, and then they're just sort of turned out to pasture, and they're not done yet. So this is not just about thinking creatively. Those of you who are young and are here and you see yourself with all this possibilities of giftedness and expressiveness that God can use for his glory, but also for those of us who have a lot of life experience that the world culture is saying, you're done. Enjoy the years you have left. Doing what? Well, we don't know. Well, no. You've got gifts. You've got gifts. And think creatively how you might use them. You know, in the church I planted in Illinois, we had, I was planting the church. I was teaching full-time undergraduate work at St. Louis University. And I was doing my PhD work. And I had three young children. So the group, as it was continuing to grow, at this point we probably had about 60 people. I said, look, I can't do all that you expect me to do. In fact, I don't believe in that model anyway. So Richard, this is when I wrote the Biblical Pattern for Church Growth. Was in the middle of this. I said, I'll do one thing. And I gave them a list of 20 things that they were presently expecting me to do, you know, like visitation and various things that you generally think leadership is going to do. And I said, what I need you to do is to take the responsibility to do these things that I'm no longer going to do. So that what they picked me to do, which I loved, I stacked the deck a little bit. I let them know this is what I wanted to do. But I wanted to be the facilitator, that is, the one who would prepare people to do the preaching. When I left there, there were 8 men who were doing the preaching. We were following a schedule together, but I prepared them. They came in 3 weeks before they preached, laid out their outline. I helped them with that. 2 weeks before, they consulted our church library. I helped them with that. I helped them develop the skills. But I say all that to say, one of my worst gifts ever, one of my worst responsibilities ever, was in hospital visitation. I'm just not good at it. You know, my biggest question is, how long do you have to stay for it to count as a visit? And what I found out was people who are sick, they don't want you to come visit them anyway, right? Sometimes. And so, you know, I'm not good at small talk necessarily. So I had a group of retired women who said, you know, we would really like to take over all visitation responsibilities. Yes, I said, tried to not quite be that excited. But they started a ministry that went on for years and years. We'd get phone calls from as far away as St. Louis. We lived over in Illinois, about 30 miles away from St. Louis. But this group got to be so well known that hospitals in St. Louis would call and say, can you send over your visiting team? Because they loved it. They had time for it. And they knew how to interact with people who were struggling. I didn't. I was too young to figure that one out. So I'm saying, be creative. Think about it. Your usefulness to the kingdom doesn't expire until you take your last breath, and then you get to be on the other side and in the real circus, right? So this is a good story. You never lose your purpose in God's kingdom. You might have to adjust it according to your physical possibilities, but there's a place for everyone. All right, so we're about out of time. We're going to take a break, and then we'll have our second session where I want to talk to you more about personally developing this understanding. But tell me some other things that stood out to you that we haven't talked about.
I kept hearing the line, "You can do anything." So I was surprised about that, I guess. Keep telling the kids, "You can do anything."
Did you notice there's a really poignant scene where before Will gets in the show, he's with Big Guy, right? Where the little African-American boy comes up and, you know, he sees the strong, he wants to be just like him. And then he turns toward Will and says, "Are you in the show?" And Will says, "Not really." And then when the little boy walks away, he says, "Man, I can be that guy," talking about the strong man. Okay, those lines are repeated at the end. So everyone, I think, has the desire to be a model to give life to someone else. And when Will finds his place after a rather difficult episode, right? I mean, that's hard. The episode at the creek is a hard one. But that calls leadership to discernment. Sometimes it takes someone struggling through something before they realize they're able to do it. So that calls for discernment, to know when is it appropriate to help and not to help. But then, you know, when he finds his gift, I think one of the most touching scenes in the entire movie is, well, okay, the little boy at the very end, what happens? Yeah, over here. Okay. You can say whatever you want to, Lois. I mean, you're going to anyway. So. You don't have to follow my prompt.
I was going to mention that anyway, because when the little boy on crutches comes up to Will, and the little boy says nothing. He just hugs Will.
Yeah.
And it said everything. And his mom looks at Will and says, "Thank you."
Thank you.
Meaning, you gave my son hope.
Yeah.
And what I was explaining to Sandra and Richard is you don't know how your situation will help somebody else. You have no way of knowing how it can help somebody else. But you do need to share it, because it can help someone else. And I know Alex is listening, but when we learned about our Alex being autistic, our world fell apart. We couldn't see any good in that. But now, with him being 33, we still get calls from all kind of people who have been told that we can help them. And when they have their worlds falling apart, we can say, we have a 33-year-old son, and we have been where you are. Yeah. Here is where he is now. And you can almost hear the relief in their voice. You don't know what your story, how it's going to help someone else. So tell your story.
Absolutely. Thank you. I needed that. Yeah, you think I came down here to help you out. I just came down for an Alex hug. That's the only reason I come to Huntsville. Back here. That was pretty impressive. So back in the back, they were doing this.
What really struck me, I think, was maybe in my mind, the keystone of the whole thing is that line that said, "With the greater the struggle, the greater the triumph." And it, to me, the whole movie was about that struggle and how Menendez allowed that struggle to occur when he didn't have to. And I think about how hard that is to do, is how hard is it for us to allow people to struggle? You know, as parents, sometimes we tell our older children to let the younger children go and learn something. But when it comes down to practice, whether it's in the church or anywhere else, we want ourselves to be the rescue instead of letting that person go through the struggle. And I think it's that struggle that he had, not only physically, you know, to be able to figure out how to swim and fall and walk and... but also the emotional struggle he had, you know, going from spitting to being able to encourage that boy. How do we become a people that can be like that circus where we allow people to struggle, we're there for them in case they fall in the deep water, and we're gonna pull them out if necessary, but how do we let people struggle?
Yeah, and it takes discernment to know, you know, exactly what to do there. But I'll tell you that you as a church do this very well. And the people that I talked to today told me that the reason that they're here is because they have found family. That's a huge advantage. It's not going to be doctrine that are going to pull people to this church. It's going to be an opportunity to be found. If it's true that everyone has something they want to contribute, then being embraced into a community where people are trying to discover their own gifts and figure out how, even through their great struggles, they become a help to others. Because in the end, only Will could have helped that young man, of all of them. Because he had visible limitations, right? And by the way, I want to tell you one quick story, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back at 15 minutes, okay. When the little boy hugs Will or at the end, okay, that's actually a true happening. If you read, I forget which book of his, he's written several, which in itself is ironic, right? I mean, that Nick in his life has been so active. And he's got several other videos. By the way, this video is available on Amazon for $14. You can download it from Vimeo. I would suggest you do the subtitle version. If you Google Vimeo Butterfly Circus with subtitles, then because some of the language, you can't hear some of the phrases very well. And some of the script is so important. But you can download that for free if you want to watch it again. I've got a DVD copy that I carry with me. But it's a powerful story. But Nick tells a story of when he speaks, and he's an incredibly gifted speaker. But they sit him up on a stool, and it's just sort of awkward. And, you know, he speaks from his heart. It's really powerfully well done. He said when it's over, people want to come talk to him. And it is awkward because he says, I feel like I'm a bust, you know, sitting on a stand. And people don't know what to do. They can't reach out and shake my hand. They can't, you know, give me knuckles. So he says it's always interesting just to watch them. And, you know, he watches. And just watch them stand up, and they sort of come up to him and, like, you know, and talk to him for a minute and leave. He said one time he was speaking to a group of adults, and he noticed there was a little girl standing off to the side, and she just stood there very patiently. And when everyone was done, he looked at her and he said, did you want to talk to me? And she said, no, I just wanted to give you a hug. And she walked up and went like this, put her hands behind her back, and hugged him with her neck. He said, she's the first one who understood how I felt. Isn't that powerful? She didn't embrace him. She hugged him as he could hug. So he wanted that in the film. Okay, let's take a break, and we'll come back and do a little more work in about 15 minutes.